You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Mark, the stock market seems to be wandering around. It doesn't seem to have any particular energy in one direction or the other, sometimes a bit higher than down the next day. How would you describe it?
It's overall bullish. I mean, if you look at the charts, you know, you're still up at the record highs. You have an uptrend still intact. It hasn't changed to a downtrend. You have higher highs and higher lows if you look at the charts. You know, and obviously, many of the semiconductor-related stocks and high-tech stocks and AI issues have been focusing, you know, investors' attention. But, you know, the big one, of course, we talked about last week, and continuing until I think it becomes public, is the SpaceX offering. So, you know, that's coming, and everybody's sort of, you know, holding their breath for it. June 4th, the roadshow begins for the, the fundraising for it. And June 11th, they're going to have, I guess, where they're going to create is the pricing allocation night where they figure out who gets what. And according to the schedule I'm reading, June 12th is supposed to be the first trading day for the stock. I think the symbol is SPCX. They're going to be using on NASDAQ. And, you know, they're going to be raising, you know, between 50 and 80 billion, I'm told, looking at the numbers. And they're looking at a valuation anywhere from 1.5 trillion up. So it depends how it trades, of course. So, you know, there's a lot of opinions about it. You know, either you're an Elon Musk believer or you're not. Obviously, if you've been all these years, you've done well, though there have been some, you know, ups and downs. You know, much of the offering, they say, is related to AI, you know, in addition to the Starlink and the actual, you know, rockets itself. So there's so many components to this thing. And, you know, Tesla stock has been doing okay. I haven't heard or read anything about the connection, but there have been rumors for a while that Tesla shareholders would somehow participate in it. You know, the skeptics are saying this is drawing a lot of money out of the market or out of investors' hands, and it could be a breather in the market afterwards. You know, if so much money on the sidelines comes in, is there any more money out there? You know, and I guess there's always more money out there, but it could, you know, really drain the well, so to speak, in terms of you know, investor appetite. So we'll see how that all plays out. But you know, many of the space economy names, other stocks, you know, like AST Space Mobile and Rocket Labs and other big names out there have been doing well, making highs. But this is going to be the largest, you know, IPO in history, and it should be, you know. The previous big one was Saudi Aramco's IPO years ago. And this is obviously much more exciting with, you know, where all this is headed. But even as we know with Tesla and so forth, it's going to be, you know, ups and downs. And, you know, we don't know what the profit is going to be immediately. It seems like it's going to take some time. But that's the case with AI, too. Everybody's been speculating regarding when is AI going to pay off for all the investments that are being made. So it should, you know, it should be real interesting how it trades, how it's offered. There's been some talk about the public being able to buy into the offering. I'm not sure how that would work. Some companies have done this in the past. We get online, you can buy some shares. Generally speaking, you know, most of Wall Street are pretty greedy about maintaining positions in hot stocks. So the question is, are they going to really allow this, and how much would they allow for the public to get in prior to the actual IPO itself? I haven't read anything about any details about how you could invest in it prior to the day it starts to trade and what restrictions there might be if you are a buyer. But, you know, for the most part, it's been private holders that have invested in the company over the years, and some special investment funds that have taken positions. Even a big name, as I mentioned in the past, Google, took a position several years ago. And, you know, the percentage is obviously small, but it's still, you know, part of the initial investment there. So there's a lot of companies that have participated. And then, you know, the question is, how is it going to trade? Is it going to open up big? Is it going to open up, you know, well, you know, we watch all these IPOs. They open up, then they sell off, then they come back up again. They're all over the place. And the question is, where is it actually going to be trading? Is it going to be a $650 stock, or is it going to be priced differently? It should be really an interesting, you know, experience, you know, when you get a hot situation like this. So, you know, that's really consuming still much of what the market is about. You know, it's the SpaceX offering and the related companies that are benefiting from it, and the technology surrounding all this. So, you know, it would make some sense that maybe there's a cooling off period afterwards, after the initial excitement, and we see where it all trades, and to see, you know, whether there's some profit taking in some of the hot stocks that surround the so-called space economy. But, you know, we just don't know. We got to watch the market. The market is the ultimate dictator of these things. You know, we could speculate all day long about what we think will happen or not happen. But you would think, if it runs up big enough, you know, there might be some profit taking by those who have the ability to trade it. You know, usually insiders are locked into the stock for a period of time, but there's a holding period, and you usually can't sell. So I don't know what those details are going to be. There's so many aspects of this to discuss. But if you're a trader and you're watching a trade and you see an opportunity to make some money in it, you know, most of these new IPOs, even if they sell off, they bounce back, and there's usually, you know, some quite interesting volatility for traders. So, you know, it should be exciting in you know, mid-June when all this happens. And, you know, outside of that, that's sort of the big story that's still out there that's consuming everyone. And we could talk about other things, but I'll let you get back to your questions.
Well, do we have a ceasefire or not in the Middle East between the U.S. and Iran? And do you think the stocks are being manipulated by, we have a ceasefire, no, we don't. Yes, we do. No, we don't.
Right. I have no idea, except for the fact that crude oil has been backing off and is well off its highs, and the oil stocks are well off their highs. And usually, you know, that's sort of telling you what the expectations are. And, you know, from a political point of view, we know there's got to have to be some settlement here. You know, we have the midterm elections coming up in the U.S. in several months. But the charts, if you look at the crude oil chart, it's in a downtrend. Now, it has, you know, a little oversold here. You know, if you look at the ETFs that trade crude oil, and I suppose if things unravel, we could get another bounce. And, you know, then, well, I guess we're off to the races again with what how the market views it. I think the market basically feels that a settlement is coming. Otherwise, you wouldn't see the S&P and the NASDAQ, you know, flirting or at new all-time highs, you know, in the last several weeks, despite all the so-called bad news. So the market's anticipating a settlement. And I guess we just have to go with that, because that's what the charts are saying, and that's what the tape action is saying. I think if the market thought it was going to fall apart and crude oil was going to the moon, the charts would be telling you that. So far, they haven't. So we'll just have to see if that really changes. Really, the bigger story, I think, I mean, this has sort of been swept under the rug, so to speak, in the sense that people think they're going to settle it, or they have to settle it. But, you know, there's always surprises, and we'll just have to deal with it. But I think the bigger story is we got a new Fed chairman in there, you know, Kevin Warsh. We talked about that last week. And it's interesting, if you're watching the bond market has been rallying. And, you know, that's bullish for stocks. That's bullish for, you know, mortgage rates, interest rates across the spectrum. So that's sort of a big positive, you know. So maybe, as I suggested last week, you know, I'm not running the Fed, obviously, and I don't have any, you know, direct input in there. But, you know, my opinion has been that Kevin Warsh really has to lower interest rates, and he may do it. You know, the Fed meeting coming up in a few weeks, and, you know, all the numbers say you can't do it, but there could be a surprise. And my analysis says that, you know, higher rates raise business costs, and that's not something you want to do. Everybody thinks higher rates, you know, slow things down. Well, you know, well, higher rates raise business costs. That's a negative, and maybe really needs to lower rates. You know, companies are borrowing money for inventory, expansion, real estate, you know, or operations, and if they're faced with higher financing costs, those costs are passed on to the consumers, and that's higher prices. There are consumers, as you know, are already suffering to a certain degree, more so in places like California that have a bunch of taxes on top of it. But the oil prices, the gas prices, have, you know, stymied people quite a bit. In addition, you know, government interest rates go up. We have a huge debt here in the U.S., and there's an interest payment that has to be made, and it's got out of control. And lowering rates, you know, helps reduce the government's interest expense on its debt. So, you know, that's an important consideration. And if they raise rates, that means, you know, mortgage rates could possibly go up or housing costs could rise. That's not good. So, you know, the long and short of it is, you know, is it stagflation or is it not stagflation? They think that higher rates are going to track along with, you know, the stagnant economy and whatever. But I don't know. I think, you know, just my intuition, it could be dead wrong. I just think he may pull the rabbit out of the hat and surprise everyone. And it's not this meeting, perhaps the next meeting. You know, one of the things I'm also looking is stocks related to this besides the bond market that I just mentioned. You know, a name like Home Depot, which is very sensitive to the housing industry, has been trying to rally here in the last week or so. And that could be an indication that the expectation is that, you know, lower rates are coming, and that's going to, not necessarily the next couple of weeks, but they are coming. And that's going to help the, you know, construction industry, the housing industry, and so forth. So, I mean, most of the sentiment is negative. Most people would disagree with what I'm saying. Rates are going up, and housing is going into the toilet, and on. But I don't believe that. I think there's something else cooking here, and I'm more of an optimist in the fact the stock market is at or near its highs here. It's telling you something. And again, we do have the political consideration with the election coming up. So I think surprises are still to the upside. And I guess the only fly in the ointment here is what the SpaceX offering does to the market. Does it help or hurt the market when it finally comes? Is it a speculative blow-off period or whatever? It's all speculation right now how that's going to play into this soup of where the market is going. But the trend is your friend. We're still up. I mean, if you remember a few months ago when the S&P was around 7,000 or a couple months back, I was saying we needed a correction. We got down at about 6,600, and here we are now around the 7,500 level. I mean, just amazing the volatility that we've seen. And, you know, you can build a case that the S&P could be 8,000 to 10,000 and maybe 12,000 to 14,000 in a few years, just based on looking at the charts and seeing the potential trend lines and potential acceleration that could ultimately occur. Of course, that's a longer term comment, but it seems like no matter how bad things are, you know, you have oil prices up and you got a war going on and all this geopolitical conflicts and so forth, and people complaining that they're going to lose their jobs because of AI and, you know, all the internal strife that we see here politically with the Democrats and the Republicans, and the Democrats trying to get elected and creating all kinds of, you know, I believe, fictitious stories to try to get into office come the midterm elections, on and on. Despite all that, markets are still holding up. So anyway, you know, if things change, you know, like anything else, we try to trade stuff. And at the moment, I'm reasonably optimistic.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with gold and silver?
Well, they're trying to forge out a little bit of a bottom. All the bears are crawling out of the caves here. I mean, that's all you're hearing is how gold's going to go down. And, you know, there's more, you know, more to the story. I think you've got, you know, a lot of people that got shaken out a little bit. But there's an interesting development here. I don't know if you've read about it or not. It's called the ARMA Act, A-R-M-A Act. And it refers to the proposed American Reserve Modernization Act of 2026. So it's a bipartisan bill tied to the cryptocurrency policy, specifically the idea of creating a federal strategic Bitcoin reserve. And this ties into the gold market as well, because there's a belief that, you know, with the support for the cryptos, the reserves may officially, they may change the accounting with regard to the gold. As you may know, the U.S. Treasury officially values gold at $42.22 an ounce. And this goes back to a statutory figure way back to 1973. So now there's a story that they would revalue part of this ARMA Act, and it's tied to cryptocurrency, but also the component having to do with gold accounting. It would say that we would revalue U.S. gold holdings to current market, or to some number well above $42.22 an ounce. So if this happens, well, you know, this changes the financial structure here in the U.S. An accounting adjustment could create hundreds of billions of dollars of new balance sheet value. Some estimate over $1 trillion. So some of that money, they say some of the ARMA-related claims say that these paper gains could help finance Bitcoin purchases, which is part of what the U.S. Trump administration has been looking to do, broaden sovereign reserve restructuring, and so forth. So this is something to watch. It's bipartisan. It's something being toyed about in Congress now. I don't know how close it is, but there is some historical precedent for this, even going back to 1934. Even, you know, back then there was a revaluation of gold with Roosevelt. I think at the time, I think back it was 1934, they had a revaluation. Gold was, I think, at $20.60 to the, and they moved it from $20.60 to $35 an ounce. And they did this back in 1934. That was a big percentage move, obviously, at the time. So when they did that, it effectively devalued the dollar and expanded government monetary flexibility. So I think on a much bigger scale, that could possibly be happening. So this is not really discussed. I don't really read about it too much, but this is big. If this ARMA Act does gain some momentum and get passed and gold gets revalued or officially revalued to, when you think about it, if it's on the government books at $42.22 an ounce, and we know gold is at $4,500. Obviously, at some point, there's going to have to be an adjustment, and this could be extremely timely, and it could do a lot. So you asked me at the top of the segment, what do I think about gold? Well, you have to be bullish. The government, you know, there's powers that be that want to revalue the value that the U.S. government claims that it has for its gold holdings, which is way undervalued. That's going to put a lot of, you know, bullish sentiment back into the gold market. All the bears out there, you know, have been talking about how we need to correct. I mean, I agree there's a chart number. You could say, well, it could correct. You know, had a big run up, and yes, it could. But that's irrelevant compared to a much bigger story that's unfolding. So, you know, if we get, you know, Warsh to lower rates, we get an ARMA Act pact passed, SpaceX does well. I mean, the horns on that bull could be growing even bigger, you know what I mean, in terms of what could be happening here in the economy and in the markets. So it's just a fascinating time. We're still waiting for the Clarity Act to be passed in Congress. I sort of passed over that here when I mentioned the crypto. They're still waiting for that to be passed. In fact, Secretary Bessent was at the White House today in an interview talking about just about everything. He's a Secretary of the Treasury, and he said Congress has got to get its act together and let's get this Clarity Act passed, which creates not only stability for the crypto market, but also would encourage huge institutional investment, which at the moment it's not legal, but this would set the framework for it. So that could drive significant money into the crypto world that's not there now, institutional commitment. So he made a comment, let's get Congress together and let's get this thing passed, and apparently it's getting closer to being passed. Now, it may not happen to the fall, but it's in the process. So we got the Clarity Act pending out there, the talk about this Armor Act, and a lot of fun stuff happening out there that will have decided effects on the markets.
Anything exciting going on with copper?
I'm not jumping up and down about it. I mean, it's doing okay. I mean, the chart says that we're, you know, still in a huge uptrend, and we had a little bit of a pullback, and now we're starting to rally back up again. So it's bullish. I'm looking at this; it's a bull chart. Yes, we had a little pullback of, but you know, within a dollar or two of it, you know, I'm looking at the ETFs that follow it, but virtually near its highs. Nothing saying that it's over yet. So the demand, you know, the demand of the data centers, you know, the construction activity, all that stuff is, you know, having a play on silver, which is still languishing, but still of great demand, and copper. Obviously, copper doing better than silver, closer to its highs than silver is, obviously, but they all sort of tie together into this great industrial expansion that is underway. You know, in sort of a way, I'm trying to understand myself the significance, as all of us, I suppose, the significance of the data centers and what this all really means, and the power generation project that the government has taken upon itself, as along with all the individual companies that are spending billions and billions of dollars. And in sort of a way, you know, we're experiencing another industrial revolution. I mean, we were sort of remaking power generation here in the U.S. I mean, you think about it. I mean, huge money is being spent to create the ability to generate more power. Of course, the power was for the data center usage, but the side effect of all this and this technology is that, you know, we're like rewiring the country, so to speak. It's like saying we're taking down all the telegraph poles or power poles, and we're burying the lines underground, and we're doing a whole, you know, enema of the whole power system here in the country. And in a way, that's sort of happening, which has huge bullish implications for future years and generations. So, you know, when you really look into it, you think this is maybe self-serving for the, you know, the data centers and the power generations for AI and so forth. The ancillary benefit, of course, is a complete rework and increase in our power capabilities. And I know many localities are upset about it. If these data centers are being built near them, there's been stories about water pressure going down or power costs going up, and all these issues are going to have to be resolved. But the ultimate goal is just to increase more power. And we do have, you know, need for more power anyway. And we need it to get out of the, get into the nuclear world for power, which we sidetracked for decades because of Three Mile Island and all these, and Chernobyl and all these fears that nuclear energy was going to be our undoing, when indeed it was our saving grace and something that we really needed to get back into. So, you know, China is not holding back and doing it in other parts of the world. And for some reason, for many reasons, we just became paranoid, and we looked at a nuclear plant and we think they were going to be dead in 2 seconds. So, in fact, here in Phoenix, you know, we have the largest nuclear plant in the U.S., west of town. And, you know, I don't drive by it all the time. It's about 30 miles west when you drive out of Phoenix heading toward Los Angeles. It's on the left side, but that's the biggest one in the U.S., current one. I'm sure there's going to be bigger ones, but maybe not. Maybe with the new technology of smaller nuclear generators and other alternative power sources. We may not be building huge, giant plants that way. We may be approaching it in a different way now. But you have to look at this as positive. I mean, they want to put data centers on the moon, and they want to. You think that's going to run on gas or on gasoline? No, it's going to run on nuclear energy. So, you know, we already have that in space. We already have all that in our military ships and so forth. So it's really the future. So I'm sort of, I guess, ranting and raving here a little bit beyond your question, but this is all big picture positive. It creates some distress to those that may be directly involved in the process that are not benefiting immediately. But, you know, so much of the economy now has been based on the money being spent on this re-engineering of energy, Jim, in the country. When you think about it, I mean, when you look at the earnings or the benefit to companies in the S&P, you know, they say most of the growth in the U.S. or the growth in the GDP or whatever is being attributed to the huge funds being spent toward this expansion. And if this hadn't occurred, we might be in a serious recession or even depression right now. In other words, it came in a very timely way. And maybe, as they say, there are no accidents. This may have been planned for a long time anyway, and we just weren't hearing about it. But, you know, most of the benefits to the big S&P companies and to the growth that we're seeing is because of these huge funds being spent in the expansion that's being created and the equipment that's being produced and the technology that's being employed. So, trying to be an optimist, I think it's all for the best, and it's something that was long needed, whether it was for AI purposes or that just became the excuse, you know, suddenly because we needed data centers and AI, now we need all this huge amount of energy. Well, maybe that increase in energy is going to help other projects besides the data centers and other needs that we're going to have down the road. So I just, you know, the more I thought about it as you know, time passed here, it's a boom for the, for the country and for the Western Hemisphere. So I think it's terrific stuff.
You know, the AI centers, data centers would probably gain a lot more popularity if they did things like use the excess heat that they generate to perhaps warm everybody's water for their washing and dishes and so on in the neighborhood, because most of your electricity bill goes to heating water.
And but there are some water problems I'm hearing, yeah, related to the data centers that I mentioned earlier. Is that what you're referring to? Because I'm hearing about shortages of water.
Well, what I'm saying is that the hot water that's going to be generated by these AI centers as they cool off, why not recirculate that water back into the town with a different supply so that people could heat their homes? Or, like I said, your biggest electrical bill, when you break it down, it's laundry and washing dishes. That all needs hot water. So why not use that hot water to help out people there, defer their or lower their power bills? Also, you can generate electricity from heat. A 15-year-old girl in Vancouver invented a flashlight that you can buy on Amazon for a little over $20 that uses the heat in your hand to generate electricity. Why not use that heat to help generate some of the electricity needed for that AI center? You know, people are looking at a short-term loop. Why not use that energy?
I agree. So who do you contact to make that recommendation? That's the question.
Well, they should be listening to us, Mark.
Okay. Well, we need to contact the big investment policy committees at Amazon.
Well, they look to
Microsoft,
do everything cheap.
Google.
They don't look at societal benefits or who they might be hurting. And here's a way to help out. We can help generate some more power with that heat, or we could help heat your water and send, like I said, send that back into the surrounding community. And so instead of spending so much money to heat the water, it's already going to be very warm.
Okay, well, yeah. Do your best to get the word out there. I don't even know who to tell about, you know, offering that that benefit. So anyway,
well, when SkyTrain first opened here in Vancouver in 1986 for the World's Fair, I was on the initial ride with the tourism minister and the premier, and I said, why don't you empty half of each car so there's room for bicycles on here so people could ride their bike to the train, get to their major destination, and then cycle from there on. And they all laughed at me. Well, 40 years later, they've done that. So I'm just 40 years ahead of the times, that's all.
Okay, so in 40 years, they can be using that hot water to help
people. Yeah, they use the hot water for the community. Mark, anything else you think we should be keeping a close eye on?
I don't know. I think we pretty much we covered it. There's a you know, surprises every minute at the moment. That's it. I think we just have to watch the the Mideast situation here and see if that any changes from it's like minute to minute. And the tape is optimistic, so I'm going to remain positive. And I think the powers that be. I believe there are powers that be are not going to permit any market sell-off here before SpaceX. You know, SpaceX is a huge, Wall Street government project. And, I don't want to be pessimistic that afterwards things are going to go sour or anything. But I think there's a vested interest in keeping the markets up and keeping everybody excited about SpaceX and getting the project funded and so forth. So I guess that's really the tone of the discussion here for the next couple, 3 weeks. And also following what Kevin Warsh does, at the Fed. So I think those are really three big stories, I guess, are your Mideast, your Iran's Straits of Hormuz situation, the SpaceX offering, and what the Fed chooses not to do in the coming weeks. And that should pretty much set the tone for the summer.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always fun. Thank you.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitt, editor and publisher of the Leibovitt VR newsletters. If you want to contact Mark or get some of your questions answered by him, you can send your questions or inquiries to info@HouseStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HouseStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HouseStreet.com radio is a production of HouseStreet Media Incorporated.